when I catch myself, so in the moment, if I become conscious of, wow, I'm reaching for my phone, or wow, I'm going to do this other thing, I actually celebrate the fact that I caught it. Because that means I'm becoming aware of my distraction, of my coping mechanism. And then I go to myself, I'm like, oh, Megan, I see you. You're just coping. You're coping with something. That's a distraction technique, because you're coping, because whatever is happening for you in your mind or in your body is really hard to be with right now. So I have like a gentle moment of compassion with myself to be like, I see you, Megan. It's okay. I don't even make myself stop that action, you know? Because that would be force. If I'm like, I caught you, you're distracting yourself again, shame on you, don't do that. Can you see how that brings me back into the same spiral of blame, shame, or judgment? That's not a great relationship.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. All right. Welcome back to the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast. Today we have Megan Bhatia joining us. She is the host of the Amory podcast, where she and her two partners share vulnerability about their experience navigating polyamory. Viewing life through the lens of relating, Megan believes that there are endless ways to deepen our awareness when we see and understand the patterns of relating. She now works with people one-on-one and in groups to develop healthy, loving relationships in every category of life. And I'm so excited to have you here today to talk about self-love. We recently chatted on your podcast together, and it was such a beautiful conversation. And self-love is a journey. It's a journey that I think so many of us have been on, are actively on. It never ends, in my personal opinion. And so I've done some trainings on self-love because I think that it is so important, yet so under-recognized as far as the value that it adds to our life. And there's a lot of miscommunication or misinformation about what self-love actually means. Mm-hmm. So often when I am talking about self-love with clients, it's like, well, I bought myself a bag. I bought myself a new pair of shoes. I bought myself nails, right? But self-love is so much more than buying yourself things. So I'd love for you to just like jump in and tell us a little bit about like what self-love means to you.
Oh my gosh, Jordan. Well, first, thank you for having me on your podcast. I loved our conversation when I had you on Amory. And oh my God, thank you for bringing up first to start it out the misconceptions around self-love. So the way that I view self-love, and this is a forever deepening concept for me as I've been exploring it for the last few years, and I imagine the rest of my life, it is being our own primary partner. That is probably the easiest way for me to relate it. It's when you are your own primary partner. So if you think about a partnership, if you were in a partnership and all they did was buy you gifts, like buy you a handbag, buy you the nails, what kind of partnership would that be? Is that fulfilling? Is that a loving partnership? Is that meeting your needs? Is that recognizing who you are in the moment? No, like we wouldn't stay. I don't know many people that would stay in a relationship when it's just buying things. So the fact that we don't have a deeper concept in us being our own primary partners is actually part of the issue. And to me, self-love is recognizing that I am a different person day by day, moment by moment. So it is me greeting myself moment by moment, being curious about what's happening inside my body, what is coming up and through it with my feelings. It is me understanding that I will be different than I was a week ago or a year ago, and also a week from now and a year from now. It is me being fully present with who I am and who I'm not, and making room to become aware, to accept who I am, to find myself worthy, and then to take care of myself. And I think all we're doing on that surface level, culturally, where the conversation's at, is really just that surface level, the care part, but it's missing the awareness, the acceptance, and the worth before getting to that care part. So this most summarized version I can give you to start out.
Yeah, I think that's so good. And awareness, being aware of ourselves, that is alone such a journey. And I know for me, my self-awareness really started after somebody else bringing up my lack of self-awareness. And it's just so interesting how so many times these skills are not taught to us. And we don't know how to be our own primary partner. How do you develop that relationship with yourself to begin to see yourself as your primary partner?
So I am still in inquiry around how to develop this and especially how to teach this, because I'm a mom. I have twin 8-year-olds and I've been teaching self-love to adults for the last 4 years. And 2 years ago, their principal came to me and said, "Hey, could you adapt what you're doing for adults?" Because she had taken the course. And she's like, "Can you teach this to kids?" So I've had the really fun task of asking myself that very profound question is, how do we teach self-awareness? How do we even teach kids to value self-awareness? Because right now, in all honesty, we live in a culture where there are very few incentives to be aware. And in fact, we are mostly de-incentivized to be aware of ourselves, because that would mean that we understand what's happening on the inside. And if we are not a full hell yes, or we, you know, feel something inside that says, "Ugh, no, this doesn't feel good," our awareness would cause us to stop and reflect and maybe make different choices. But we're in a world that's really taught to externalize our decision-making processes to other people, to tell us what is good, to tell us where we need to go, what we need to do. It would severely impact, I think, society on a whole, humanity, if we were truly taught the skills and value of self-awareness. So I think that this is going to be a decades-long inquiry on how do we not only teach self-awareness, but value self-awareness and then integrate it into our day-to-day life and our system. So I'm starting with the kids. And the way that I'm viewing that is just for them to have curiosity, to be curious about themselves and what's happening on the inside, and to normalize things. So we sit down and the first thing I ask them to do is check in with themselves. Same thing I do with adults. When I greet them, it's like, "What's going on? What's happening inside of your body? Can you check in?" So I start, and the name of the class at my kids' school is Inside Out, because it's really starting with the inside and valuing that enough to bring it out, where most of our life is like outside in. We're told.
Yeah. What's so interesting to me is I think for a lot of kids, you're not really given an option. You're told. And I think even as adults in our society, it's like you're told this is what you need to do. You don't necessarily have the say to pause and reflect and think about it. And it's changing that and really listening to, like, do I want to do that? Is that something that aligns with my values? And even like when it comes to our jobs, not just everyday life, but just our jobs too.
I mean, that's why I think when we view self-love as the primary relationship with ourselves, it's everywhere. It's not like self-love is a separate thing that you have to remember to do. It is how you relate to yourself, and how you relate to yourself is where you're going to make decisions from. What things are you going to say yes to? What things will you take on? What kind of relationships do you want to get into? Who do you spend your time with? So self-love literally is like at the core of everything, or it's reflected back to us in our work situations, in our relationships, in the relationships with family members of like, "Wow, this isn't working for me. And yet I'm still here. Why? So we could get into a whole conversation about boundaries and I mean, everything, but I do actually want to mention that I use a 4-pronged or 4-pillar approach just to kind of simplify self-love to see it in different categories. So I use the framework of body, heart, mind, and spirit. And the main question that I use to prompt people, and if people take away one thing, it would be this question: how am I relating to fill in the blank? How am I relating to my body? How am I relating to my feelings? How am I relating to this relationship? How am I relating to this situation? Because everything is in that relationship. Everything is in that question. How am I relating to? So it kind of separates out, we'll call it the loving witness, you know, the piece of you, the higher self, the adult self that gets to watch yourself in progress or making decisions. And when you can ask yourself that question, how am I relating to, it pulls you back far enough to actually look at what's happening with curiosity instead of judgment, blame, or shame. And from that vantage point, you then have a little bit more leverage to ask yourself, is this working for me? Do I want this? Like, Am I relating to this in a way where it's from the past? It's just like such a juicy place to relate to our current, you know, moment or self from.
And it helps you stay curious. You know, you said that you talked to the kids about being curious. And I think that that question just sparks curiosity into what's happening, which is actually something that comes up so often on my podcast, staying curious about ourselves, about our relationships, mm-hmm. about our sexual desires, like always approaching things from a place of curiosity. So I love that. So how does self-esteem and self-care differ from self-love?
I think that those are byproducts. They are actual byproducts of self-love. It's not like for someone that is in a loving relationship with themselves, they will have self-esteem, meaning they will find themselves worthy. If someone is in a loving relationship with themselves, their day-to-day practices and habits will be self-care in that genre. So it's not, again, it's there's no separation to me. It's just like when we have a loving primary relationship, these things will arise. And if we don't, so if we don't have self-esteem, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you try to like mantra over that, it's not going to work. You know, if you're just like, if you truly, the way that you relate to yourself is that you do not value yourself, but you tell yourself like, I'm worthy, I'm worthy, I'm worthy, I'm worthy. But on the inside, you're feeling like that's bullshit. Of course, it's not going to stick. Like you're not going to force self-esteem on yourself. There's no amount of force. And again, even forcing ourselves is a relationship with ourselves. You know, that's a dominating relationship, using force, using should, using need to. So if you're like, I need to have more self-esteem, that's already coming from a place where you're like, I don't have enough self-esteem. Instead of, wow, it's really curious that I'm not feeling good about myself. That's really curious. I wonder why that's happening. Oh, what if I could deepen my curiosity around what is blocking the natural value of myself? Then we could make some effort in there. And then the same way with care, like I should care for myself. I should do this. I should do that. I need to take better care of myself. No amount of force or dominating yourself in that category is really going to get you the long-lasting, sustainable effects that you want of self-care. It will just happen. Like I don't even have to think about stuff right now. The things I put in my body, the people I spend time with, like all of it just flows out of this natural state of I'm in touch with myself and I care for myself. So of course I'm going to make the decisions that work for me. Does that make sense? Like we can see the effects of the outside in society, even in the conversation of self-love. It's not going to work that way. It's got to be inside out.
One thing that I also hear when it comes to self-love is like, I don't have time for that. So how do you help women in particular prioritize their self-love while managing their other responsibilities? Because I think that so often we think this takes a lot of time. And I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah. So even in that question, you can see how it feels separate. So for people that say, I don't have time for self-love or self-care, you already see a division that it is something outside of me, something I need to do, an extra thing that I need to put on my checklist. And that's already an externalized vision of self-love or self-care. So if people could just reorient to say, I am always in a relationship to myself. I mean, we all have stuff that we got to get done today, you know, like I got to go wash the dishes after this from the breakfast that I made my kids. And you know, there's like day-to-day mundane things, but in that mundane thing, it is aligned with self-love. It's like, I can take a moment to value myself in that moment. Like, good job, Megan, for preparing a healthy breakfast for the kids this morning. And, you know, and just process and use it as like a little quiet time. Again, to me, self-love is not separate. It is a part of us every single moment of every single day. So if people can flip that, and then start to realize like, how am I talking to myself? I could sit and wash dishes and talk to myself like shit. I could berate myself. I could do that. That is not very loving. Or I can use that time, which I already have to do, wash the dishes, 15 minutes or 10 minutes. And I can reflect. It can be a practice of gratitude. It can be a really great experience with myself. That's like, those are like moments. I cherish those moments and like little moments to myself.
It's interesting because I'm thinking about how I often have music playing at my house, always, whenever I'm doing anything. But I also feel like I am then not necessarily with my thoughts. I am with the music and how it might actually be really valuable to make it silent so that I can be more in my thoughts and be more present with myself. Ooh, we're about to go down a rabbit hole on that. But being more present with ourselves while we are doing our daily life tasks.
Yeah, I'm curious. So I literally just thought about this morning. I was like, I journaled about it. I'm like, I realize how much I love music. So I would challenge you, Jordan, to say, what is the difference? Like, is there actually a difference between you listening to music and you not listening to music? Because it is still the self experiencing a moment with the self. And you can, there's like no right or wrong. You can have a moment without music and just be with whatever's occurring in your body. You can also have a moment with music. I find I'm very much like you. I love moments with music. And I find that what that does is it takes my spirit, my heart, even my body and my thoughts to another place. And I don't view it as a place outside of myself. I view it as an enriching experience, like the music is adding an experience of myself for myself that I enjoy. And so why would I deprive myself moments of that when I really, like, I find myself in my body and in my thoughts more enjoyable when I listen to music. And it depends on what music. Sometimes I want more like upbeat. Sometimes I want calm. But I find that a way to actually like resonate within myself. So again, I don't see it as one or the other. It's just kind of like what, if you're dating yourself, it's kind of like, what experience do I want to provide myself right now? Do I want to provide myself an experience with music so I can move my body and like feel this? Do I want to provide myself a moment of calm? And then there's no right or wrong. You know, there's no should without music, with music, whatever.
I love that. Really eliminating should from our vocabulary.
Yes. Yeah, because that is a force word. That is a domination word, because should implies that there is something in the way that you are being or what you're doing that is not what it needs to be. For like, for whom? For who?
Yeah. So I brought up just a second ago, being present with myself or with oneself. Recently, I was journaling about how when I spend time with other people, I am very present with them. My phone is generally do not disturb, or like I'm not checking it. I'm not checking Instagram. I'm not checking Facebook. I'm not doing anything. I'm just being present with them. Yet when I get alone with myself, I have a hard time being present with myself. And I'm constantly distracted by all of those things. And so I'm curious, like, your thoughts on being present with ourselves and that relation to self-love.
Oh, can I ask you questions? Is that fair?
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. So what does that feel like when you say that you're like, you find yourself being distracted or distracting yourself? And then what's that conversation in your head about how you're relating to yourself in those moments? Or even now, like, how are you relating to that version of yourself when you do those things?
So something that's come up in therapy for me is like this fear of self-intimacy. So the being present with myself is very much related to that, in that I haven't really figured it out in its entirety, but if I sit down and listen to my big scary thoughts or explore things and stay curious about myself, then it's maybe overwhelming is the best word, and scary. And so I think that the lack of presence probably has to do with it's fear-based. You know, if I don't go there, then I'm avoiding it.
Yeah. Oh, can I ask you one more question? I literally cannot help myself. Thank you. I appreciate your vulnerability in this. And I'm sure so many people can relate. So is it a bodily sensation that comes up? So if you say that you have those big thoughts or big, you know, things, is it an actual physical sensation that you're having a hard time sitting with? Or is it the thoughts? Or do you not know? Is that like not a thing? You just find yourself like going to that distraction.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal. I think it's part of it's in my head and potentially like not necessarily always knowing, but I think it's a lot of spinning and rumicating of thoughts.
Yeah. Okay. So I can relate. And this is how I've gone through a huge transformation in the way that I've related to myself. And I still catch myself actually doing the same thing, distracting myself with different things. And when I catch myself, so in the moment, if I become conscious of, wow, I'm reaching for my phone, or wow, I'm going to do this other thing, I actually celebrate the fact that I caught it. Because that means I'm becoming aware of my distraction, of my coping mechanism. And then I go to myself, I'm like, oh, Megan, I see you. You're just coping. You're coping with something. That's a distraction technique, because you're coping, because whatever is happening for you in your mind or in your body is really hard to be with right now. So I have like a gentle moment of compassion with myself to be like, I see you, Megan, it's okay. I don't even make myself stop that action, you know, because that would be force. If I'm like, I caught you, you're distracting yourself again, shame on you, don't do that. Can you see how that brings me back into the same spiral of blame, shame, or judgment? That's not a great relationship, you know? So if I blamed my kids every time they did that, that would be like a really harsh relationship with them, instead of curiosity of like, oh, I see that you're hopping on the screen again. Like, what's going on? You know, and just kind of like being curious about what's going on in their world. That's a more loving relationship. So that's my first step, is like be loving with myself when I catch myself distracting, and give myself an option to like keep distracting myself, because sometimes I don't want to go into those thoughts or those feelings, or I don't feel equipped to. And honestly, I'm energetically, you know, constantly on a wave. As females, we're on a monthly cycle. We're on daily cycles as well. So I give myself permission to be like, nah, I don't have the energy right now to like dig into that part of myself, but I know it's there. Like, I know it's there. I'll come to it. So I'm way more gentle on myself than as I was raised as a child. My dad was in the military, so it's always harsh. It was like, I had the harsh, harsh, harsh voice in my head of like that inner critic of like, you shouldn't be doing that. And get on this. This should be fine. And I would like barrel through. And actually, the way that I treated myself there, I judged everybody that did not push through. Like, if they saw that moment, I would have been like, you know, get on it. Why are you wasting any time? Because that was how I treated myself. So now I have far more compassion for myself, far more compassion for others. And that doesn't mean that I don't hold a space to step into that scary space. Like, I do hold that space. I just find that I am more likely to step into that when it's optional, when it's not forced, when I'm like, okay, I'm ready. So I'm going to talk about, you mentioned two things, right? The thoughts in your head and then the bodily feelings. So this is why I separate out self-love into body, heart, mind, and spirit, because it's a lot easier, even though we work as a whole system, it's a lot easier to break it down into little pieces. So I have a whole bunch of curriculum. By the way, if anybody's listening, I have a developed self-love course. If you're like, oh, hey, this is a lot to remember. So please don't feel like you have to remember this. Just like follow through with me. Our mind can be a very beautiful place. If we can befriend our mind and have our mind work for us, it's such a helpful tool. The thing is, though, we've given our mind the reins. Like, that's what we've done in our societies. We've said the mind is the end all be all. Your mind becomes the safe place when the body is freaking out and you're just like, I'm just going to go to my head. But then we live in our head and then we don't know how to work the head and the body together. So the mind, then you can get stuck in what I call whirlpools. They just like, they're thought loops that just keep going and going and going. And you're like, I've been down this one before. You know, it's not going to take me anywhere I want to go, but I'm just going to sit here and ruminate, you know, be part of that thought loop. So what I do is I bookmark, plant a flag in my head for the original thought that sends me on that spiral. So there's usually a thought like, I'm not good enough. I should know this. I shouldn't be doing this. Like, there's usually a root thought that comes in like the form of a phrase. So if I can find and identify that like thought virus, we'll call it. And we have a lot of them. So this is like a process that you can work with on yourself as you identify these thoughts and phrases that just aren't helpful. You can bookmark it and then do the same thing I told you before is like celebrate when you actually catch yourself thinking it. Because as soon as you celebrate it, then you're conscious of it. And then you can find a slightly different thought to think. And I'm not talking like don't scale the mountain all in one go if you haven't built the practice. It's like if you have a thought that's like, I'm not good enough. Saying I'm good enough is not going to feel true in your body. So this is where the mind and the body have to work together. Your mind has to come up with a phrase that the body can agree to. The body's like, yep, I'll get on board of that one. So if you say, I'm not good enough, what is like a 1 degree difference from I'm not good enough? It might be, I am doing my best. Does that feel true in your body? It might be, I am practicing loving myself. I am working on accepting myself. And so if that feels true in your body is going to accept what the mind is giving it, you know, instead of forcing mantras and affirmations forced, it's not going to work. It just doesn't work. So finding something that your body can get in line with. And so you have that original thought, something happens and you think that thought because it's grooved into your neural pathways from having thought it so many times. I'm not good enough. You celebrate it. I caught myself. Yay. Caught myself. Oh my God, this is my opportunity to think a slightly different thought. Okay. I'm not good enough is not serving me. I am working on a loving relationship with myself. Okay. I can think that. That's what I call a mental push-up. These are mental push-ups. If you do this 100 times a day, it takes work. Nobody's going to see this work that you're doing, but I guarantee you, it is worth it. So keep doing those mental push-ups because you are rewiring your brain, which is totally possible, but not without effort. And so how I use anger, and this is where we get into feelings a lot. Anger is one of the most misunderstood, not used energies in the whole world because nobody taught us how to use anger. So there's nothing wrong with anger. There's actually nothing wrong with any emotion that arises through your body because that's what is. Any resistance to what is that should, that force, that domination, resistance energy, you're totally losing that. You're losing the wave of that energy, right? So anger, if anger occurs, because normally the I'm not good enough would be accompanied with some anger, right? Towards yourself. So the reason that anger is so misunderstood or misused in society is we either use it against ourselves to fight ourselves, to dominate ourselves, or to dominate and control others. Neither one of those is actually going to get you what you want. How I use anger is like catalyst energy. Anger is telling me that what is occurring is not what I want, or it's telling me that something is not fair. So anger is a really catalytic energy. So the way I use anger is I declare to myself that I'm no longer willing to think that old thought. So something happens, I think the thought, I'm not good enough. It is accompanied by anger. That anger energy helps me to catapult into you creating a new thought. Now, notice I don't use that against me. I'm not saying I'm bad. I'm not saying anything. It's just, it is a mental boundary. It's a line in the sand saying, I will no longer treat myself like that. I will no longer put myself in situations like that. You know, and that does because any change takes more energy than staying the same. It just does. It's always going to take more energy. So tapping into our anger reserves from a place that is self-serving, self-loving, and from a place of healthy, loving boundaries with ourselves and others, it's such a juicy medicine that we can use.
I love that you brought up anger because interestingly enough, I was journaling last night and anger was coming up. And I was like, this is a really good insight to redirect. And that, yes. Okay, if anger is coming up, is this still serving me in this particular situation that was arising? I'm like, does this continue to serve me? And if I am angry about this, maybe this doesn't serve me any longer. So I think you're right that anger is very often misunderstood and can be a really good tool to say, hey, something is happening here. I should probably look at it and see, is this in alignment? Where is this coming from? And definitely diving into that.
Oh, I love your curiosity, Jordan. I really do. I love that you're like, where is this anger coming from? What? How do I use this? Oh, it's so good. Yeah, actually, every emotion is like that. Every emotion. So the way that I work with the kids, I do this fun game around emotions. And it's kind of like, I write down a whole bunch of emotions on a piece of paper and the kids draw one. So let's say you drew the word sadness, right? It's not charades. You're not acting it out. The rest of the group has to ask you questions to figure out what emotion you drew, right? So it's no pressure on you. You're just answering questions. The questions that the kids ask is where I direct them because that is their relationship to that emotion, right? So all the kids will start out by asking first, is it a good or a bad emotion? See where we're going with this? Emotions are not good or bad. So I reframe their question and I say, instead of asking, is it a good or bad emotion, is it easy to feel in your body or hard to feel in your body? So that is helping them to understand some emotions are easier to feel than others, but they're not good or bad. That's not how we relate to our emotions. It's just what is. And then we can ask more questions like, when did you feel this last? What was happening? How long did it take to move through? What did you do to help it move through your body? You know, so it's all about the way that we relate to our emotions. And the reason that I bring that up is there's a really great book that I read a couple of years ago called The Secret Language of Feelings. And that author's idea or premise was that every emotion is arising and the quote unquote negative emotions are actually just needs not met. And our positive emotions, in quotation marks, are needs met, right? So sadness is a loss of something or someone of value. That is what it is telling us, right? In our system. I am sad because I have lost something of value. The need for something of value is not met here. I lost a person. I lost an object of value. A situation that I'm not going to get to participate in. Happiness, we don't really pay attention to it a lot because we all love being happy. We're not sitting there with our minds like, I'm feeling happy because I have things and people of value around me. We're just like, that's what we want. And that's what we're aiming for. So it's really fun when you start to identify as feelings, as the sensory data that we get, if our need is met or unmet. And then we need a translation tool that I call, everybody's personal Rosetta Stone is, can I translate the sensory data that I'm getting from my body into a need that is not met usually, because usually we'll take action from things, from those emotions that are hard to feel because a need isn't met. That's going to lead us to take an action to try to get that need met. Or if we notice, if we can have gratitude and curiosity when we are feeling happy, joyful, blissful, all of those things, like, wow, what is happening? What choices did I make in my life that led me to this feeling? How can I create structures in my life to allow this feeling to arise more if I want that feeling to arise more? So we can start to be our own, we can like observe ourselves in our body instead of being afraid of what's in our body. So back to your original point on you sitting with you, if you had a framework in the way that you relate to yourself, Jordan, of like, I'm receiving information from my body. Can I be curious about it? And I know some is hard to feel, but it's not going to kill me. There's actually no emotion, nothing that can arise sensorily in my field that will kill me. Can I sit with it? And can I sit with it for 5 seconds to listen to what it has to say? Can I sit with it for a minute without trying to wriggle out of it and do something else? And the longer we can sit with it, the more information is going to arise for actions that we want to take, or, that's where like all of the insights around, ooh, how do I need to change my life? Or what do I want to do? What do I want to do less of? What do I want to do more of? All of that information will arise naturally from those feelings.
Yes. I love that. Sitting with our emotions. That book is definitely going in my Amazon cart today. I feel like for me, emotions and feelings are something that I never learned. And I think most of us never learned what they were or how to interpret them. Like I have to use a feelings wheel 90% of the time to identify a feeling because I don't have access to that language.
Yes.
And so That book sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's The Secret Language of Feelings. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? It's just sensory data. And the word for that is called interoception. I only learned that word last year, which is really funny because we learn our outward senses. We learn that, you know, sight, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, right? Those are our five outward senses. Interoception is our process of feeling internally. There's also proprioception, which is like our balance and our way of navigating our body in the world. But those are not talked about, but they're just as important, right? Interoception, proprioception mm-hmm. are internal. And I'll give you more hints on how I work with kids. Like, it's been so fun to translate what I do with kids because it's helping me simplify to the easiest format. So I have the kids actually check in and I ask them, not how do they feel? Like, well, we start out as a surface conversation when we check in, like, how do you feel? Happy, sad, tired, blah, 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 blah. We go around the circle. And then I go around the circle again and I ask, where does that feeling live in your body? And I have them use descriptive words. Because sometimes if people think that they are sad, they won't like go in here. They'll just be like, I'm sad, and cut it off. But if you actually sit with sadness and you're like, how does that feel in my body? Oh, I have a tightness in my chest. Oh, I have like a hollow, empty feeling in my stomach. Oh, it's painful actually. Oh, I have a tightness in my throat. You know, these are all just sensory inputs. And what happens is because we don't spend a lot of time valuing our internal world, giving it language and helping guide kids through it, we are all messed up with actually what we're feeling. Like, to actually name an emotion is already translating it because the feelings in the body are not in English. They are in a sensory data language, right? By the time they get up here and we're talking about it with words, we've already conceptualized the actual feeling. By the time we conceptualize a feeling, we have a relationship to that sensory input. You know, like if I think that this is the feeling that's sad and people have told me not to feel sad, that it's bad to feel sad, I'm going to have a relationship to whatever's happening in my body is bad. So of course I'm going to want to get out of it. Of course I'm going to want to like shake it off or make it someone else's fault or make someone else be responsible for the feelings in my body because those are bad. But when kids or us adults, we can sit with it and ask ourselves, how does this actually feel in my body? And sadness for me, I realize I can see that there's a big crossover between sadness and eating. Because the hollow feeling of an empty stomach when I'm sad, it kind of feels like I'm hungry. They're not miswires, you know, but of course I might jump to eat something to fill that void in my stomach because it feels like hunger. But no amount of what I'm eating is going to actually move that feeling of my stomach, you know? So it's like identifying what is the difference between feeling sad and feeling hungry. Anxiety and excitement are really close too, right? It's kind of the same sensory data, the sensory data of increased heart rate or, oh, I get flush, you know, I can like sweat more. I get a little shaky. And so if it's a very similar sensory data, how am I relating to that sensory data? In some ways, it could be the same feeling in my body, but I know that I've got something coming up that I'm really excited for. So of course it feels like excitement. You know, if what I'm thinking about has like a resistant tone, I might feel like it's anxiety, you know, and relate to myself in a different way. So it's really, it's that crossover between the sensory data, the feeling that we name it, the way that we relate to it. And then what information is that actually telling us and what do we do with that? This to me seems, it's like the more I talk about it, the more I realize this should be like the fundamental human education of like, we are in these bodies. We haven't even talked about the nervous system yet, fight or flight, because that is the lack of safety, right? And the lack of safety, once we notice that, then we can work with it. But we are mammals. We have a nervous system. It is the way that we work in that nervous system, how we relate to the information the nervous system is giving us. Like, this is really fundamental. I hope in 100 years, this is like, duh, of course, humans, we got to teach this.
Well, I know like in Montessori programs here in the States that a lot of times they are teaching more about mm-hmm. this, or like the program that you're offering, I presume in Costa Rica, like that's happening in some places.
Oh, it
it's
is.
Not widespread. It's not, you know, in public school systems, I don't think.
Not yet.
But I think that would be amazing to have that. I'm curious. So if somebody's listening to this podcast and they're like, okay, I see that I would like to improve my self-love, what is maybe a couple practical first things that they can start incorporating into their routines and into their daily life to help them develop more of a primary partnership with themselves?
What a great question, Jordan. Okay, I would start out with that question. How am I relating to my body? How am I relating to the situation? How am I relating to these emotions? That's like primary. The more that you can ingrain that as a habit, the more you will be flexing that loving witness muscle. That is like where your relationship is going to come from, that curiosity. This is very personal to me, but when I wake up, I greet myself. Legit. Like I literally like, good morning, Megan. I'm so happy to be with you again. And that might not feel genuine for other people to do. So maybe don't start there if it doesn't feel good. But I have a morning stretching practice and I'm a mom, you know, my kids will sometimes wake me up before I get up, or I understand that I'm not asking people to do like a 20, 30 minute practice. But as you start to move your body to begin the day, like greet it with gratitude. Like, oh, I get to be in you again. And I notice sometimes, like if I put my feet on the ground and my feet are sore, instead of that resistant energy of like, ah, my feet hurt, and I'm like already mad at my feet, I have a body gratitude practice that is like, I feel you. You're calling my attention. Thank you. I will give you extra love today because you're feeling sore from maybe what I put you through yesterday. So I really try to work on that relationship with my body as in gratitude for what it does. I greet it. I love stretching. The way that I view stretching is like, there's no force in my stretching. And for people that can't see me, I'm like stretching currently as I'm moving my body, my arms. So when I stretch, I like feel that tension point where it gets tight and I greet myself there. I do not force myself past a limit. And I also don't shy away from that point where it's like, ooh, like I feel it, that's a little tight, or that's starting to be a little painful. I don't cause myself pain, but I allow myself to sit with it. I think that there's many different ways. So that's like one other way is like greet yourself, greet your body. And I would say if possible, ask yourself to be with like that edge, that edge of that feeling in your body. You introduced me actually, and we haven't talked about it at all, practicing polyamory. So I have two partners and polyamory put me through emotional exposure therapy. So that means that I had to experience a lot of emotions and just be with them because that was the nature of my life. I mean, now it still is the nature of my life, but I have a muscle of being with whatever feelings are in my body. Just like people go into cold plunges to actually feel that sensation of cold and know that they're going to be okay and they work on that muscle. It's the same muscle with your emotions. The more you can sit with your emotions, 5 seconds, 10 seconds before you distract yourself, a minute, 5 minutes, that's going to be your practice of self-love because you're showing yourself that you can be with yourself. There's no better gift you can give yourself than being with yourself, however you are, like literally however you are, happy, sad, mad, like anxious, excited, like all the feelings, being with yourself, however you are is like, it's delicious. And it's okay to have to work on that muscle and start with 5 seconds or a minute at a time.
I love that. I actually have a girlfriend that invited me to cold plunge on Sunday. And I'm like, ooh, I think there's a lot of reasons why I would like to do this. But now having you said that, I'm like, ooh, yeah, this yes. feels good. And I think it also just helps, whether it's cold plunges or sitting in the emotions, it helps us learn how to regulate ourselves through that.
Yes.
And that like you can do things that are uncomfortable and you're not going to die. You're going to be okay. And reassuring and learning how to manage that. Recently, I journaled about love because love is a tricky thing for me. And one thing that came up is like, love is a natural feeling and never has it killed me. So like it can be painful, but it doesn't mean that like I should restrict it or hold it back, because at the end of the day, like, even if it changes, it's okay. And so just learning that, like, all of that is okay. And it's part of our human experience.
Oh, I love that, Jordan, so much. Love to me is, it is the experience of all of the emotions. It is the ability to hold all of the emotions. It is everything. It is everything. It isn't like one spectrum of the emotion. It is all of the emotions, if that makes sense. So to me, that's why there's so much room in love. It's not like only this little bit. It's like, it is all of it. It is the capacity to hold and experience all of it.
I love that. This conversation has been amazing. And I know that the listeners are going to love everything that we talked about and really gain some good insight about self-love. Before we wrap up, I would love for you to define what pleasure means to you.
What does it mean to me? That's such a good question. I'm going to go to, how do I relate to pleasure so that people can see that? Because that's what it means to me. Like, the meaning exists in my relationship to it. So I would say, before, I didn't really allow for a lot of pleasure personally, you know, in my body, heart, mind, or spirit. And because I had such a forced relationship with myself, it was like I was always forcing myself to do the hard thing and getting value out of doing the hard thing and my identity out of doing the hard thing. So there, like, wasn't a lot of room for pleasure. Like, that didn't, I didn't value pleasure. Now I value it so much. So whether or not it is like feeling the sun on my skin in here in Costa Rica, or having a good conversation like this one, like, this lights my heart and my mind on fire and it is pleasurable. I think my capacity to hold pleasure is so much more now, because I'm not resisting it, because I don't relate to it like a bad thing. I relate to it like a way of knowing this feels good and I would like to do more, and I'm allowed this. So it's like, now I kind of view it like, how much can I allow? How much pleasure can I allow into my world? And so I'm working out that allowance muscle. And sometimes I butt right up against it. It's like, that's so pleasurable. I don't know if I can allow it. So I'm still working on it.
That edge, like you were talking about a second ago with, like, stretching, like, what's that edge? Are we playing with the edge? And what does that look like? So that sounds so juicy.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Jordan.
Where can the listeners find you at?
Okay. So on Instagram, you can find me at Amory Podcast. Actually, that's more for people that are interested in the open relationship realm, but I do share a lot about self-love there. That's Amory Podcast. And my personal handle that I'll be sharing more about self-love is The Loving Challenger. I have a lot of courses online, and you can find those at amorypodcast.com. And actually, Amory, like, is a podcast, so people can look that up, Amory. They can listen to more.
And we'll get all of that in the show notes as well for the listeners. So thank you so much, Megan, for taking the time to chat with me and having such a beautiful conversation.
Oh, thank you, Jordan, for your curious questions and for sharing and letting me ask you questions too. I love it. I'm so happy to know you.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life, or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns, or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode, and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again, and see you next episode.